Kitty Rhodes is the Secretary of the Department of Health Services. She oversees one of the fastest growing programs in Wisconsin. Our Medicaid budget this year is $9.22 billion, of which GPR taxpayers, state tax funds will be $2.77 billion. So it's a great time to talk to Kitty Rhodes. Kitty, welcome back to Wisconsin High.
Nice to see you again.
You know, when I look at some of these numbers on Medicaid, Medicaid spending was up, will be up this year, fiscal 16, mm-hmm. over 15. All funds, 9.8%. GPR, which is state funds, 10%. Is this sustainable, ma'am?
As we have discussed with the elected officials, even if we were to make the cost of Medicaid a dollar per person per month and keep it at a dollar forever, there would still continue to be an increase in the spend because more people come in. And keep in mind, Medicaid also includes frail, elderly, blind, and disabled.
Yes.
Not just those who are below the federal poverty level.
Right.
And it's no secret that nationally our population is aging and we're living much, much longer than we used to. I was talking to a geriatric internist the other day and he was describing his caseload. And he said he's come to the conclusion we need new terminology. We have elders and we have super elders.
Oh.
And he was saying that at dinner with my brother. And my mother, who's 89, said, "So, what am I?" And he said, "Well, you're knocking on the door of being a super elder. Yes. So our responsibility in being good stewards of the taxpayer dollar is to ensure that we are taking care of those who need us.
Right.
But we are controlling the growth of the spend, that it becomes predictable, as my budget mantra days from when I was in the legislature, predictable, budgetable, and manageable.
Three or four years ago, your predecessor sat in that very chair and said, people should know that every child in Wisconsin has health care. That's still true, correct?
Yes. None of the changes that we've done through the budget process impacted children, frail, elderly, blind, disabled, and pregnant women.
And
the biggest change was providing health care for those with whom it was invented, Medicaid was invented, the poor. And so for the first time ever, childless adults living at 100% of federal poverty level or below mm-hmm. have access to complete health care, physical, dental, and behavioral. That is historical.
Okay, and I understand that. But that change, according to the numbers that I did getting ready for the show, 67,700 went off Badger Care as a result of that change.
Mm-hmm.
Of that, so 62,000, I'm sorry, I misspoke, 62,000 off of Badger Care. 36,000 got coverage elsewhere, maybe through the Affordable Care Act. So is that a success story?
Sure, because moving them into the commercial market, number one, Medicaid, your benefits change based off your income. So as you earn more, you get less. And we know in the former Badger Care, employers would call and say, Kitty, they won't take overtime because they'll lose part of their benefit. They won't take a promotion. Medical assistance was becoming a disincentive to work. That's moving in the wrong direction.
Is it still?
No.
It isn't.
Well,
so
at the 100% federal poverty level, you know, if you reach over that,
yeah.
then you move into the commercial market. But by moving these people into the commercial market, they no longer have that disincentive. You can earn. Commercial insurance companies reimburse providers at a higher rate than Medicaid. I've never had a healthcare provider say, Kitty, I'd much rather have Medicaid than United Healthcare Insurance. So by getting as many as possible into the exchange, mm-hmm. we actually are getting our providers a higher reimbursement rate. We're returning Medicaid for the purposes which it was invented, the poor, and helping them gain the tools that they need to become independent as well and to move them into the market. The reforms that we implemented were not designed to lower the cost of Medicaid. We knew that wasn't going to happen, nor to reduce the numbers. But going to 100% and below, we knew it was going to be a challenge because this is the population that tends to have characteristics like homelessness, mm-hmm. AODA, alcohol issues, drug issues, mental health issues. And we figured they're going to be hard to find. So you can't direct mail that group. Mm-hmm. So we really were looking for how are we going to reach out and be successful. We watched what the federal government did when they rolled out Part D and spent millions of dollars marketing to consumers saying, this is really good for you, brought to you by the government. it didn't work. People get their advice about healthcare, particularly from people that they trust. So we looked at a not-for-profit Milwaukee Health Partnership, which does a really good job. And we said, we need to replicate this, but it needs to be done regionally. So we created regional enrollment networks and brought communities together and said, we're going to give you the technical assistance, but where do your people go? Who do they listen to? Where are the resource centers that they use? We designed them regionally. We paid for an AmeriCorps individual to be in each one of what we call the REN, Regional Enrollment Network, and they were the communication between the department and the local entities. And honestly, we were much more successful than we had intended. And they enrolled at a higher rate than we had budgeted. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, we submit our budget the September before the budget process begins. So we're working with data to be known in September of 2014. The Kaiser Foundation actually highlighted our regional enrollment networks as probably one of the best practices in the country. And they were here last week asking how did we do what we did in complying with the Affordable Care Act, because we are unique in how we reached out to people. Mm-hmm. We brought a folder of all of the outreach tools that we used, all the letters we sent. We had call centers going, trying to reach people. If they called you in the morning and you didn't answer, they couldn't call back in the morning, different time of day. Some of the regional networks went door to door, lip dropping people. And so we did the most unique, and we're the only non-expansion state to have 100% access to coverage.
Are you worried about caseload? And the reason I ask, when I went to the agency website yesterday, it showed a caseload in September of 1.19 million, which is one out of every mm-hmm. five Wisconsin residents. Mm-hmm. That's above the projections. And so here's my question. Is higher caseload means the agency can't stay within its budget for MA for the current biennium?
No, it's a snapshot in time.
Okay.
Since then, the trends have been decreasing. So it's always fluid and it's always changing. We have the philosophy within our department is to budget very cautiously, go for the worst, and hope it doesn't happen. But if it does, then we're ready for it. We've also been implementing some real efficiencies to lower spends elsewhere mm-hmm. to accommodate growth in the caseloads. We're also experimenting, if that would be the appropriate word, on different ways of delivering healthcare to, number one, get better health outcomes, but to lower cost. So frequently we hear about people who utilize the ER inappropriately. And so we're doing, with the National Governors Association's help, we're doing a medical home, which is not a brick and mortar facility, but a system of how you deliver the care, with complex individuals who have three or more chronic conditions, who have visited the ER X number of times per year mm-hmm. and or have a cost of $100,000 and coming to say, we need to fix this. And so the medical home then comes together and treats the whole individual. So it's the behavioral, the dental, the medical, and helping to address the wraparound services. Because a lot of this is also involving homelessness, lack of employment. And so we've putting together the tools to say, does this work?
How many of those homes have opened?
It's in the process because okay. it was part of the budget.
All right.
We have one that is Care for Kids that was started before, and it's on delivering total care for kids who are in foster care. These kids have enough challenges, but they tend to hop, or they're relocated from one home to another home, which then means their caregiver changes, their psychologist is different, they can't get a dentist, and it's very challenging. So the medical home provider, which is Children's, is responsible for meeting all of the needs of that child in Milwaukee, Racine, and Beloit. And so we are very excited to be able to actually make an impact. So that medical home, the care coordination is by the provider. In the in the complex care one, it is through the managed care or the HMO.
Where do
so
you think
two different pilots see which one actually bends the curve?
With our MA costs going up 10% a year, where do you think has the greatest potential areas for savings? And is this why we're pursuing the waiver? And correct me if I'm wrong. My summary of the waiver is the budget directed DHS to submit a waiver to the federal government.
You're talking about for family care? Because we have a lot of waivers.
MA, okay, for childless adults,
okay.
Drug testing, screening, four-year, you can only be on it for 4 years, and enrollees pay premiums. That waiver. So, but the question
which are multiples.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Waiver is plural.
Plural.
What's the greatest potential area to save money?
Right now, Family Care IRS 2.0. Virtually all Wisconsin residents are in managed health care, except the frail, elderly, blind, and disabled. How does that make sense?
And they are some of the most expensive clients, correct?
Well, they can be, especially the disabled population. So in family care, we have a managed long-term care program. And, you know, we've had good experience with it. But that same individual can be a raging, out-of-control diabetic who's ended up in the hospital 4 times, and we don't know it. So we need to manage the whole person. And so in our what I call 2.0, you maintain the family care benefit, and you add on the health insurance benefit. You maintain the IRS benefit, mm-hmm. and you add on health insurance. Now, this is significant because the growth of the spend in managed health care has been roughly 1.8%. The growth of the spend in long-term care,
yes.
roughly 2.1. Fee-for-service, where the elderly, blind, and disabled are,
yeah.
11%.
11% compared 11 to 1.8 and 2.1?
Previous year.
Yes, okay.
11%.
1 year increase in cost of caring for who, excuse me?
For the basically frail, elderly, blind, and disabled.
Are these the IRS?
Fee-for-service. They're IRS and family
clients?
Care, long-term care.
Okay.
And so we need to control the growth of that spend.
Because that growth, 11% a year, is not sustainable.
No, it is not. And when I met with the legislators, and, you know, I've discussed even as an elected official, you've got to get the growth of this spend under control. But I didn't have the resources to figure out where it was until I had the opportunity to function in this position. And so while I told elected officials, I know voting to reform family care and IRS is a tough vote.
It is, because
it's a tough vote.
Wisconsin and I covered those public hearings on the budget.
You can
and some of those stories of IRS participants and their family members and caregivers, you know, it breaks all of our hearts. But go ahead.
You know where IRS came from, right?
No, but please tell me.
Kitty Rhodes' bill.
Oh, back
but
when you were...
But it was called MyCare back then.
Okay.
And
you're the mother of IRS?
It took me 8 years to get consumer-driven health care in the Wisconsin program. And when Governor Doyle wanted to take family care statewide, CMS said you have to have an alternative program. You have to have a choice. There it was.
There you were.
I'm not going to blow up. I don't like the name IRIS, but I like the program.
Okay.
So the legislators had the opportunity to protect the programs that the individuals love, but also to protect future state budgets. And if you don't do it now, then don't come tell the agency to get the spend under control. Because you could cut rates, benefits, and eligibility and still come nowhere near the monetary need.
Well, then let me ask you, how well did the budget that was signed into law, joint finance to the full ledge to the governor, how well did it do in addressing some of these long-term IRS costs or long-term care costs that are growing 11.1%?
It gave us the permission to begin the journey. So we were also required to hold 2 public hearings on proposed changes. I think we've done 12. And we have to submit. When you develop a waiver, you start with a concept paper. A waiver is a lot of fill in the blank. And honestly, if you were to read it, you wouldn't have any idea mm-hmm. what the program's actually going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept paper has to go to finance before we can submit it to CMS.
Yes.
So we will write the concept paper, then we're going to hold 2 more listening sessions.
Right.
And then take it to finance.
So
and based off of if they like it, then we go forward to CMS.
What's your timeline to hold 2 more hearings and take it to finance?
I have to look. It's in the budget. I think we have to be there by March.
You had to give a progress report September 30th, and I think one at the end of the year. So
we always report on the status of Medicaid quarterly.
Right.
And so there was an update in there. And this month is the beginning of the writing. And so it's a work in process using all the hours of input that we have.
If this budget lays the groundwork to address some of these cost drivers, what are the major questions, policy decisions that will have to be made in the next budget, 2017-19, excuse me, for some of these, for IRIS and for family care? So this lays the groundwork for what's the next set of major policy decisions?
Well, pending the CMS approval.
Okay.
When we then know.
Do we want to assume the CMS approval?
Well, they always tweak stuff. And it is an arduous process. You know, it's not where, like, a essay test where you submit it and the next week you get it back with a grade on it. It's an ongoing negotiation. Actually, I have been negotiating on a tribal long-term care waiver over 2 years.
Oh.
And they can do, okay, take it back, I'm stopping the clock. And
have the feds approved any similar waiver
yes.
for any other states?
26 states.
26 states.
Have been approved or are pending.
Okay.
When Wisconsin invented family care, we were the first to do managed long-term care. There weren't managed care organizations. We had to grow them. And so we were totally into braving a new world.
Mm-hmm.
Other states have long since watched what we've done, and none have replicated family care as we know it. They do the whole person. They do long-term and health care, both.
Didn't the governor's budget, correct me if I'm wrong, the governor's budget in February recommended, let me get the term right, an integrated health agency to manage some of these?
The legislature inserted an IHA.
IHA, okay.
We think that our waiver would probably say, formerly known as a managed care organization, herein referred to as a integrated health agency.
Would there be savings if there was one entity managing these long-term care costs?
Well, I don't want just one. I believe in choice. There needs to be choice. But right now, we're paying the admin costs of 10
okay.
MCOs who manage. They're actually regulated by OCI. They're little insurance companies without a big enough risk pool to be able to really get sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And they're an insurance company that has one payer,
okay.
us. That's not a good business situation.
The budget, I know you want to get to dementia, which I promise we'll get to, but the
before
budget.
Before I forget.
Yeah, before we both forget. Yes, the irony. But let's talk about a change. The budget also would make changes in the food share program.
Mm-hmm.
To participate and continue to receive those benefits, you'd have to be drug screened. I have that right?
There, if there were, I believe there's a health risk assessment involved.
Thank you.
And so depending on the completion of that, some would not. But again, this is really about getting people the tools that they need
okay.
to become independent and employable. And we've heard from employers say they can't pass drug tests. So let's make sure they're going ready to go. And we were in the previous budget, you know, we put the worker training for able-bodied childless adults,
mm-hmm.
we call it FSET, in the food stamp program. Because, and it was expensive. It's expensive to do that. But again, that our social service programs are to be a safety net, not a lifestyle. Let's help get you the tools you need to become independent. And we were shocked to see the number of individuals who voluntarily have enrolled in FSET. They want the training. They want to get to work.
Well, are those receiving food share now in Wisconsin having to undergo drug screening? Has that started?
No.
Is that because that lawsuit has blocked it, ma'am?
There is litigation, so we'll leave it at there is litigation.
There is litigation.
Hmm.
But is the agency's plan, if you fail this drug screen to qualify for food share, would you be disqualified or no?
No,
would you
treat.
Yes.
So just diagnosing isn't fair. We're providing the treatment. And so once you're in the treatment program, you're still eligible because now you're not an able-bodied.
Does that need a federal waiver to happen?
Treating people?
No, the drug testing and drug screening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And has that waiver been submitted, or is that
that's
still pending?
That's what's in court.
That's what's in
the
court.
The concept is in court.
Okay. Okay. So now, before we forget it, I have three other subjects, but I know you want to talk about dementia. And when I went through the budget, there's $1.1 million for dementia care specialists, but they would work for
Correct.
The aging and disability centers.
Resource centers,
yes. But recently, you and the governor announced a dementia program for employers. So, okay, I know that's a an issue you're very proud of. Talk about dementia before I come around with a couple of other
sections. 2 years ago, alleged council was study committee was put together to address the issue of where do we treat individuals who have dementia or Alzheimer's who mm-hmm. get in crisis, who need timeout. They had been using the Mendota Resource Center, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court said an individual with dementia cannot go there. It's not an appropriate placement, that a psychiatric hospital is for treatable and recoverable mental illnesses, and dementia is not that. We're like,
oops.
Okay.
Yeah, now we...
So as we listened, we
now
realized...
Now we need a plan.
Yeah, yeah. Now, as we listened to the whole process, we realized it isn't just that particular issue. The infrastructure by which we deliver care to individuals and families of Alzheimer's and dementia isn't right. And so we said, give us 2 years to redesign the whole system and then see what statutory changes we need to make it better. But give me a chance. And the group said, well, we like what you're saying. I said, have you ever had an agency say, make me do it, and make me do it in 2 years? They went, no. I go, what have you got to lose? So I walk out, and they go, what's your plan? I go, I don't have one. I don't know the answers. So the Johnson Wood Foundation picked us up, said, we'd like to help you. We hosted a summit. And the foundation said, but you only have 38 people. I wanted individuals who are experts, who touch the lives of dementia patients from every aspect, the medical, the physical, the spouse, the caregiver, the law enforcement. So I said, use them. I won't come. I'll do a video welcome. Mm-hmm. And then they won't try to build something that they think I want. And so I gave them the direction that said, start from the beginning. Create it as though we have nothing. Don't get hung up in, we can't do that, or how are we going to pay for it? Just, what should it look like? And they came back with some guiding principles. You know, we'd be better at awareness. We need to do dementia-friendly communities. We need to do crisis training. They had these, and we said, okay, let's get started. So we redid the functional screen to make sure that at the beginning, are we picking up behavioral issues? We did, with the University of Oshkosh, we have online training for basically every aspect of caring or being engaged with a dementia patient. They came with the dementia-friendly communities, and I'm like, I don't know how you're going to do that. They did it, and they came up with and it's a great toolkit, very specific things that if I'm a restaurateur, here are things that I can do to make my business be dementia-friendly. And the beauty of this program is we just put the toolkit out there. I said, how are we going to deliver this? If I give it to public health, that's government. Mm-hmm. It was never going to run right. There'll never be enough money, and it won't work. But AARP has members everywhere. So I called them and said, would you partner with us? Every community's got to build their own. It has to be based off their people, what resources they have, and what they need. They agreed, and their national association is very interested in seeing if we can present to them next year. We did 3 tele-town halls to AARP members, and we had 43,000 people on the calls.
Is there any other state this far along in screening dementia?
We are
unique. Setting
up
programs?
We are unique in the multi-prong approach. In the nursing home industry, we were concerned about the use of psychotropic drugs on individuals who have behavioral and mental health issues and dementia. And they came and they said, Kitty, we got this music therapy. I go, we've been doing music therapy for 100 years. They said, no, watch. The video is called Henry Alive Inside. If you haven't seen it, get your box of Kleenex out because it's an amazing 6 minutes.
So what website can that be seen on?
He has his own.
Okay.
Henry Alive Inside.
Okay.
You use an iPad or an MP3, and you build songs that were important in my life when I was young and productive. Henry is basically sitting in a nursing home with his head down. He's been that way for 10 years. He doesn't communicate. They put it on his headphone, and immediately his head comes up. He starts doing his version of singing and dancing. Pretty soon they're asking yes or no questions. He's answering. And in the 4 minutes that the music is on, at the end he is using the most beautiful adjectives to describe what music does for his soul. I showed it at Cabinet Monday, and we had people in tears. We're the first state to implement that in every nursing home we have. And I could only afford to do 100 at a time. They didn't wait for us. They said, we're doing this. Rotary's partnered up. It is amazing. It's in assisted livings. It's in the community. We don't own it. We don't regulate it. But the difference in quality of life is amazing. Then Governor Schreiber called me. He said, Kitty, you're doing good stuff, but you're missing part. Caregivers are still working their real job. Then they come home and go, how am I going to get through this? He said, you don't know where to look, and I don't have time to look. So we partner with the business communities, and Friday, Governor Walker rolled out what I believe is the first in the country, employer's toolkit. As an employer, why do I care if you're taking care of somebody? It impacts your productivity.
Right.
And so this is a toolkit that we are very proud of because it gives their employees the resources that they need. We're sending it out to state employees, and it simply said, do you have somebody in your life who has trouble with falls, getting meds mixed up, memory loss issues? Click here.
And any employer watching this, can they go to the
right
DHS
online,
website?
Toolkits right online.
Right online.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cost any money, and you can do it.
Okay. We're running out of time. Can I hit three subjects quickly?
Sure.
Medicaid expansion. As you know, 31 other states have found a way to expand Medicaid. The Democrats, waving that fiscal bureau memo, say we could get an additional $350 million in federal aid if we expanded.
The answer is no.
That was my question. Should Wisconsin reconsider its decision?
No.
Why?
Because we still have made the right decision. That is a temporary subsidy. And so you still have even more people enrolled on a reimbursement rate that you know is going to go down. You know that. Now, there were elected officials who used to be very hung up on the term structural deficit. That's a structural deficit.
It is.
But you also then compound. The federal government doesn't just deal with our reimbursement rate. Take, for example, the increase in the Part B premium that they proposed that was going to cost the state of Wisconsin $43 million, over which we have no control and no elected official is involved in that decision. Now, do you call that sustainable? No, I don't call it sustainable.
So have Governor Branstad in Iowa, Governor Kasich in Ohio, and Governor Pence in Indiana made the wrong decision?
I don't live there. I don't work there.
I understand.
I believe that we have found the Wisconsin solution to complying with the Affordable Care Act, and we're on the national radar for the creative ways that we've done it.
Okay. Second question. One of my next final question issues. The Affordable Care Act, should it be repealed, revised? Now that
that's a question for elected officials, and I'm not one.
Yeah, well, I know, but you administer health care policy.
I'm not an elected official. Oh, that's not my decision.
That's not your decision?
No.
Well, then let me ask it this way.
What's your third favorite question?
No, I'm going to elaborate on this one. Has the Affordable Care Act worked in Wisconsin because, according to CMS, 207,000 people now have health care who didn't prior to the ACA? Has it worked in Wisconsin?
100%. Of Wisconsin residents has access to insurance health care coverage. That's a success.
That is a success.
100% have coverage.
Okay, and the 207,000 who have it, that's a success because they didn't used to?
I don't know about those who are in the exchange and the implications and impact there. That would be a question for OCI.
What about that mandate that says individuals must carry insurance? I know it's a federal issue. Do you have an opinion on that?
I believe that we will find that there's always going to be individuals who do not have insurance. You have to write a check. Some people choose not to.
Okay, so you have talked about, we have documented the 10% growth in MA in Wisconsin. 10% growth in the tax support for MA in Wisconsin. You have talked about the need for savings. So here's my final question. If we don't achieve savings, what does our MA spending look like? What does state priorities look like in 10 years?
Well, as you know, I can make recommendations. Those decisions are actually made by the elected officials. And when faced with shortfalls, when I was in the legislature, I said you use your limited resources to budget your priorities. When they lay out their priorities, you know, I believe that we have long said taking care of those who need our help is a priority. And that's why it's so significant of getting Medicaid back to the purpose for which it was invented, those who need our help. Give everybody the tools that they need to be able to say goodbye to us. They don't need our program. I'm independent, including kids with disabilities.
If we don't have savings in MA in 10 years, is two-thirds of the state GPR budget going to be Medicaid?
Well, again, we don't come with a pile of cash in a bank deposit slip saying, look what I saved. What we do is to ensure that we have managed the growth of spend. There will be more people coming in.
As we get older, as Wisconsinites
get
older.
They will come in. It's being ready for it, being managing it, and being able to predict correctly the growth and controlling the growth of the spend. And keeping people healthy and in the least restrictive, least expensive, right care, right place, right time, right cost.
You have some clients, patients, that cost in excess, you mentioned $100,000. You've seen some cost $250,000, haven't you?
I've seen more.
You have. Okay. So, is this your biggest fear, out-of-control costs in MA for the future?
My biggest fear is not addressing it.
Not addressing it.
And not having, you know, when we did not have the permission to do 2.0, I struggle because then you only have rates, benefits, and eligibility left. And that is not how I want to achieve reform.
Thank you. Kitty Rhodes, Secretary of the Department of Health Services, always a pleasure. Thank you. Good to see you again.
Check out Henry.
And watch Henry, okay.